This is Examining Education, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Goldsmith Conley. Today's program, the second of our pair of programs on technology, looks at the nitty-gritty of implementation. As mentioned in our first program on technology, Secretary of Education Arne Duncan sees schools at an important transition point and is actively promoting the shift from a print-based classroom to a digital learning environment. His recently released National Technology Plan, Transforming American Education, Learning Powered by Technology, sets out an ambitious agenda for using technology to transform teaching and learning, and is a call for action that many education technology advocates say is long overdue. In this program, Technology in Education, the Nitty-Gritty, we look at the school districts themselves to see what they're doing to answer this call. Our first guest is Mark Edwards, superintendent of Mooresville Graded School District in North Carolina. The Mooresville School District has taken such big steps in technology that it was recently the subject of a PBS feature, The Mooresville Tech Revolution. Superintendent Edwards, welcome to our program. Can you tell us a little about your background and experiences in bringing technology to schools?
Certainly, I'll be glad to. This is my 17th year as a superintendent, and I've had three different occasions where I was in a district or in an environment where I had an opportunity to advance technology. The first was in Henrico County, Virginia, which is a district around Richmond, Virginia, and back in 2000, we deployed 26,000 laptops to every 6th through 12th grader in that district. The enrollment there was about 48,000. Later, I moved on and became the dean at the University of North Alabama, and we implemented a one-to-one at our campus school, which is called Kilby, and provided all 3rd through 6th graders of that school with a laptop. And then the College of Ed deployed laptops in all classrooms. And then in Mooresville, we've now deployed laptops to all 3rd through 12th graders in the district, and all 4th through 12th graders take the laptops home 24/7. So we've been extremely excited about that, and I just had the opportunity this morning to visit one of our intermediate schools, and I was very excited seeing the great work that teachers and students are doing using digital resources.
Wow. What are your reasons for bringing all this technology into the classroom?
Well, the first, and I think the primary reason, had to do with advancing student learning. And back when I was superintendent in Henrico, I was superintendent there from 1994 to 2004. We had a very serious digital divide, an economic divide, and an opportunity divide. About 50% of our students were on free and reduced lunch, and we had areas in that county where there were students who had every type of amenity, educational amenity from home, and students who had absolutely nothing. And the same was true in this district. We had an opportunity divide, a digital divide, students with resources, students without. And I saw this, and our school board saw this, as a means to bridge that divide and at the same time to advance achievement. And I'm very pleased to report that we have had some outstanding results in terms of student achievement. And I do believe that the advent of using digital resources has had a lot to do with that.
I was just going to ask you, what do you see as the biggest changes that have occurred?
Well, the level of student engagement. In fact, just this morning, I was at East Mooresville Intermediate School, and I was talking to Principal Robin Melton, and we both observed that the students are highly engaged. And I really do think that it has to do with this, what I would call a connectivity relevance. They see what they're doing in school translating to their future. The other thing is, and I also was involved with recording a TV program we do here with some teachers this morning, and our teachers were talking about the level of differentiation that the tools really lend themselves to teachers being able to work with small groups and students being able to stay on task and enjoy what they're doing and be focused. So two really drivers: one, differentiation, and then also this level of connectivity and relevance and engagement.
Uh-huh. So back to the digital divide, have you found that this has helped to overcome that?
It's been remarkable. I really believe that one of the areas that we have just a great hope and opportunity has to do with closing the achievement gaps in some of our subgroups. In fact, at the third grade level in Mooresville, our achievement composite on our state test for third grade, the math composite, is 95% pass rate. The state average is in the 70s. And our pass rate, if we break it into subgroups, the pass rate for African-American students is 92%. Poverty students, it's 93%. For Hispanic students, it's 93%. In fact, our lowest performing group, our special education students, are performing at 91%. And I would attribute it to a lot of different things. One, excellent teachers and outstanding principal leadership and parents and students who are committed. So I think that it has been a driving opportunity both for students and for families.
Well, what sort of preparation did you need to do before you brought the computers in?
Well, a real key, and this is something, Elizabeth, that is we have monthly visitations and have had districts coming from all over the 42 different states, and in fact have had a significant number from the state of Illinois. But one of the areas we really emphasize is in-depth planning, and we planned before we deployed the laptops here. We planned for a year. We met every week with a leadership team that included everyone from operations handling the infrastructure and the wiring and all of the foundational operational elements to our instructional team, technology team, leadership team, and did an interweave with a rollout of professional development for teachers and staff that is ongoing. It's a sustained effort to build capacity of all teachers and all leaders. And we've done a lot with building leadership capacity, but we have focused training on by grade level, by content area, so it has a lot of relevance to the teachers. And have also integrated into that training for using data, one of the elements of the digital conversion, that's what we call our program, has been that we have a lot of real-time data. Just this morning, I was watching a young man. He was using a program called IXL Math, which is tightly aligned with the North Carolina course of study. And he was doing a formative assessment regarding his math lesson, and he had scored 100, and a light came on his computer, and it had some gaming effect, and he looked up at the principal, and he said, "Miss Melton, that's the third straight 100 I've made." And so that immediate response, our teachers have built the capacity to use that to inform their instruction, which we see is just highly exciting. But we've also built into the summer, we have summer institutes. It's a volunteer training program, a week-long program, but last year we had approximately 90% of our teachers participate. But we also, our school board has demonstrated, I think, significant leadership in arranging in our school calendar an early release day every other Wednesday, and we dedicate that time to ongoing professional development. So I think a real key to our success has been a real commitment to professional training for teachers to build their capacity and their understanding and their collaboration. And I think all of that has translated ultimately to the benefit of our students.
Have you had any barriers that you've had to overcome?
We certainly have, and one of the things that we would share that any district, and we've had probably 30 or 40 districts that have visited Mooresville and then have elected to move forward with their own version of our digital conversion. And one of the things that, obviously, financial barriers, we have had 3 years of cuts in our budget at the state and local level, and in fact, 2 years ago had to lay off 5% of our workforce. So we've had some significant cuts. So the challenge of balancing the budget is an issue, but did not receive any significant additional funding. We simply used existing funds, and I like to use a model of if a district can commit a dollar a day, or approximately $180 to $200 a year, that will cover our software, hardware, and professional development. The infrastructure, we have used funding through our operational budget, and look at that as you would look at paving parking lots or plumbing, and look at that as an infrastructure cost. And our, again, we rank 99th in the state in funding. We spend $7,700 per pupil per year. So we have dedicated approximately $200 of that for our digital conversion. But we no longer use textbooks, or I would say we're 90 to 95% textbook free. And so we're no longer buying textbooks. And the totality of the software that we're using for all of our online content comes to about $40 per year, which is approximately half the cost of one textbook. And our students have just a wealth of resources available to them. And so when I think of the connectivity, the financial barriers are real but can be overcome. And then obviously the change management for both teachers and principals is a significant challenge, and I think that a thoughtful plan to build that capacity, to use a scaled model as we did. We initially rolled out laptop carts in all of our English classes at Mooresville High School. That helped us in terms of every student had access, but we also were able to do some troubleshooting and work out some kinks. But again, we're into our fourth year with this program. So it's been something that we have built out over time, but the change management, the financial barriers, and then we certainly saw not significant, but some just what I would call resistance to a new model of instruction, because visitors who come here often comment that they see very little whole group instruction. We really focus on project-based work, student collaboration, and we see a lot of individual work, teachers working as facilitators, and we use the term teaching from the inside out. Our teachers will teach from the center of the classroom, moving, and we move, instead of desks, primarily tables, because the tabletop lends itself to more effective use with the laptops and student-student collaboration. But we've seen a variety of barriers, but I believe that those barriers can be overcome with a sustained commitment, and then again building capacity of everyone to drive the success for students.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the resistance as having gotten less as you progressed?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I believe it has dissipated down to almost nothing. And again, I think the first year there was probably a greater element, and then each year it's dissipated. And now I would probably use, say, 95% of our staff are fully on board. We use the term all in.
You know, you mentioned that you're 95% free of textbooks. Do the textbook companies have any role in your curriculum?
Well, we use some online resources from Pearson is one of the largest textbook companies, and we're using some of their online resources. And I think that as we're seeing an evolution of school materials and content, we see migration away from the traditional textbook model to an online model, which really makes much more sense and has embedded assets including video vignette, formative assessments, and a lot of functionality and utility that enhances instruction that's way beyond the textbook model.
Have you had any support from, for example, the federal government, the state, the district, professional organizations, or?
We did receive a relatively small $80,000 grant from the state of North Carolina related to a technology initiative. Lowe's Home Improvement has their corporate headquarters here in Mooresville, and they provided a $250,000 startup grant, which was significant in terms of our initial infrastructure cost. But other than that, it's been funded out of just local and state funding.
Mm-hmm. And what about professional development, advice, mentoring?
Well, we have one of the challenges in terms of being both pioneers and leaders that we did not have a lot of models to work from. And so initially we had to develop our own staff development. Now, we used a lot of noted authors. We've used the work of Linda Lambert on building leadership capacity. We're very, very, very fond of Michael Fullan's work and used his work on All Systems Go, The Seven Secrets of Success. We're big fans of Malcolm Gladwell, and when I said we used it, we've used their research, their materials, and then did a retrofit to our own needs and professional development. But most of our training we've developed in our own within our own system and use our teachers. Now, we have particularly focused with some veteran teachers. I know we have a veteran math teacher at Mooresville High School who's in his 44th year of teaching and says that he is so excited he can't possibly retire because he's making such a difference, which is absolutely true. But we have used a variety of our own teachers, principals, and staff to do training.
Would you elaborate on the advice you gave earlier to what would you say to other districts who may be contemplating such changes?
Well, first, we would issue an invitation to any of the audience to come down to beautiful Mooresville, North Carolina. We're about 20 miles north of Charlotte, and we'd be glad to show some North Carolina hospitality. We have monthly visits, and anyone can go on to our website at mgsd.k12.nc.us and register for a monthly visit. We do limit the visits to 50 individuals. Then we also provide a training opportunity during the summer. Elizabeth, I'm going to do a little commercial here. We have a program called our Summer Connection, and last year we had 400 attendees from 30 different states, and we do very specific training in everything from the detail on deployment to handing out the laptops, to professional development by content area, by grade level, building the community support, developing the financial model, but also the due diligence with the planning, significant planning, looking at everything from the instructional end, professional development, the communication with parents. When we deploy laptops, parents, it's required that they come in, they go through training on acceptable use and understanding the importance of parents being involved in monitoring the use of the Internet. And we also, students are required to go through a training, and we've been very successful. We've had 100%. Now, with a few of our parents, we've had to go to extraordinary efforts to get them to come in. But I think that the planning, the prior preparation is absolutely essential. And then also building the leadership capacity, the role of the principal, the role of the central office staff changes because the expectations are different. And we've built that into our instructional model. We've also built it into our evaluation model, and we have training sessions for teacher leaders ongoing. So it's a comprehensive program, and I think it's really important to look at it holistically.
Thank you, Superintendent Edwards. We've been talking to Mark Edwards, Superintendent of Mooresville Graded School District in North Carolina. In a bit, we find out how a school in Champaign, Illinois, decides on what technology to purchase and the ongoing challenge to keep up with the latest software and hardware. This is Examining Education. Our next guest is Roger Grinnip, Director of Information Technology in the Champaign Unit 4 School District in Champaign, Illinois. Tell us a little about your background in terms of technology and education.
Okay, well, the last 6 years I have been with the Champaign Unit 4 School District in the technology department. Prior to that, I was a Microsoft certified trainer, and I trained system engineers and database administrators, security people for a number of Fortune, very large companies. I trained for Caterpillar, State Farm, OSF, General Electric, and even here in Champaign for the sewers retirement system here locally. But from an educational, most of my time has been spent in the private sector, but the last 6 years I've been in the public sector, and did that by choice, and am finding it very, very challenging and a lot of fun.
Can you tell us about some of the differences that you found between private industry and public?
Well, private industry, because you're typically dealing with a for-profit, all right, and then technology is an integrated part of providing that profit, whether it's used as a tool or whether it's used as a communication piece, or if you're dealing with databases for internal information, et cetera. So it supported and had a major impact on profitability, productivity, et cetera. In the educational arena, education, your product is an educated student. And whereas in the private sector, if a company decided to do this, they came out and they said, do this, and here's the program we're going to use. There's a lot more collaboration necessary in the public sector than in the private sector.
Well, can you describe, before we go into more detail, describe the district in terms of the number of schools and varying levels of technological development?
Okay, sure. From a demographic standpoint, we are a fairly high free reduced lunch district. We have right at 9,500 students. We support about 1,400 staff. All right, so we're looking at about 11,000 users, and we have approximately right now on hand about 5,000 computers throughout the district. When I got here 6 years ago, we were sitting about 3,200. So we've increased that tremendously. We have 18 schools with a total of 23 buildings. Our infrastructure is all fiber connections between the buildings and going out to the internet. All of our internal networks are wired, right, at a minimum of 100 megs throughout the buildings. So we have a very functional, and it's all switched, fabric network. So it's very quick, very fast. So it's from a technology standpoint, we compete with most enterprise level organizations. Now we are a little bit behind when you start talking about trying to be wireless in every building, but we're hoping to have that by the end of 2014.
Well, what would be some of the variations between, say, a really new school like Booker T. Washington and some of the other schools that aren't quite as new?
Okay, well, for the most part, Booker T. has, of course, all new equipment. Some of our other buildings are sitting on 5-year-old equipment that's being planned on being replaced in the coming year. We try to stick to a five-year renew cycle. Economically, you know, and fiscally right now, that's becoming a challenge with the state in the condition it is, and just education finances overall being in the condition they are. But we work very hard at staying at that level. From another standpoint, you know, as far as, you know, the infrastructure is definitely built with 15 years from now, what's it going to look like? The electrical capabilities within the building are a lot higher than what's available in some of our older buildings. Let's face it, even schools that were built 10 years ago or 15 years ago, no one knew how much electricity was going to be needed in a building to support everything that we're looking at. It's just like, you know, in my home, my wife and I are constantly saying, gosh, we need more outlets, you know, with all the little things that you've got to charge and all the little devices.
Right.
Even homes are in that position where, gosh, we're out of outlets.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's not just in education. It's everywhere, you know, just the sheer number of devices. You know, you no longer have just a TV. You've got the TV and a DVD player and a speaker system and, you know, a cable box and, you know, all the other little pieces that go with it. And it doesn't take long till you're out of plug-ins.
Are you finding that the pace of change is really picking up?
Right now we are having a hard time staying equal with it. If you just stop and think, you know, when was the iPhone introduced? 3 years ago? And now we're on our fourth or fifth version of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So whenever you look at something like that, or 4 years ago, I guess, and we're on our fourth version, every year they're changing something. And they've got us hooked to where, you know, we run out and we buy the newest. Well, you can't fiscally do that in the educational arena. It would be nice to have all the latest and greatest, but, you know, the iPad changed before it even hit.
Right. So how do you decide which technology to purchase?
Well, we're trying to look at it from a standpoint of what can we support. I think that what we need, what we're looking at, and a lot of people in the IT, in the educational IT sector are looking at is, well, we need to be more web-based. We have to have the thinking of, okay, if you bring your own device in, that helps the district from a fiscal standpoint because I don't have to provide you one, but then we have to give you the infrastructure to support that device. I think we have to think in the terms of anytime, anywhere, any device education. We have to look at that. And that the only way we can produce that is basically through a web-based scenario.
So what are some of the other issues that you need to consider?
Training is a big one. As quick as technology changes, it's becoming imperative. You know, when we look at our children, if the technology changes, they just say, "Okay, it changed. Let me play with it and I'll figure it out." Okay, we have to, you know, nowadays in the technology arena in our field, we have to take it more or less upon ourselves and say, "Hey, I need to learn this piece, all right, and therefore I need to take the time and I have to learn it, because if I wait until there's training provided for it, because the technology is introduced long before any type of official training materials are produced. So by the time that the training materials are typically produced and they're out there, it's almost time for a new version. And the training is no longer a classroom scenario. It's, okay, yeah, we'll provide you with training. Even our new software that we buy, they say, okay, yeah, we'll get training is included, and it's all webinars, all right? And those are available anytime. So the old idea that we're going to take and sit down everybody that's going to be using this and put them into a room and say, here, we're going to give you training today on this, and you're going to walk out and you're going to know how to use it, it doesn't happen anymore because it's all webinar.
You've mentioned some of the barriers. Can you go into more detail about the barriers you've had to overcome and are still facing?
I would probably say that you could classify these into a number of areas. All right, you have the financial side, which I think speaks for itself in the state of Illinois. You have application side. As quickly as the applications are changing because of the new technology, very few of the applications that we have available are configured or set up to be available to people with mobile devices. They are the educational companies count on education being anywhere from 3 to 5 years behind everybody else. And a district like ours that has the capability of being at the cutting, you know, at the current technologies, all right, or at least entering into the emerging technologies soon, find that applications for the mobile devices and et cetera are very lacking. The reason that we've held off upgrading our library software was because they just recently, in the last 2 years, produced a version that's web-based. So we're finding that, you know, the Follett's, the Pearson's, the Houghton Mifflin's, they're behind. Like right now, you try to find a textbook company willing to give you only without textbooks. And if they're not going to give you the textbook, they still want that price, even though they're going to give you a digital copy. So because they are for profit, I mean, you know, we live in the United States, all right, then yes, they're going to try to protect that profitability because they have shareholders that they have to answer to.
Now, in terms of mobile devices, because I know several of our other guests have talked about having people bring in, or having children bring in their own mobile devices, but then you need software to integrate all of them, don't you?
Right. Well, one of the things, whenever they come in, the one inherent piece is they can get to the internet, but that has to be infused into the curriculum. In other words, it's great that we say that we're going to use these technologies, but until there, you cannot go to school right now and come out with training that shows you how to integrate technology into your lesson plans and into your curriculum. It doesn't exist. There are no courses that say this is how, and there's very few educational platforms from the higher education piece that says, hey, this is the way it should look. Here's the model of what technology or how a smart board is integrated into a fifth grade lesson. This is how a PowerPoint is used. This is where you would use, you know, the mobile devices that the kids have. And that's not being modeled. And there is no piece out there that teaches new teachers how to do that. They're kind of left on their own accord. Okay, you've got to figure it out and do what you're comfortable with. Well, mm-hmm. At that point in time, you've got 92,000 different ways of doing it and no consistency. And it's hit or miss. I think that the curriculum has to be written around the infusion of technology, and then it has to be modeled, and it has to be shown this is the way it should look.
Do you suppose the textbook companies are going to be doing that?
I think that some of them are. Right now, I know that, is it Mifflin? Mifflin has an all-digital algebra, and they were in the process of creating a digital geometry that's without textbooks. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's being tested in Pennsylvania and a district in California. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they are with the testing, but I know that that's where it is.
I know that some people are saying, oh, great, well, we won't have the cost of textbooks.
Oh, yeah,
but it does
will.
Sound, yes, it sounds as so it sounds as though the textbook companies are going to make their online products just as expensive.
Well, perhaps not just as expensive, but they're going to make them just as profitable.
What kind of support have you had from, for example, the federal government or the state or the district or professional organizations?
Well, we have a number of partnerships. From the federal government side, we just received a $5 million grant for magnet schools, okay, which we're very excited about. We're also involved in the Illini Cloud, which is we're looking at from a cost savings and productivity standpoint, which will allow us to do some IT-related functions better and a lot less costly. We're also partnering here in Champaign-Urbana with the UC2B piece, which is the Urbana-Champaign broadband project. We're one of the supporters and partners in that. Education is a very big boat, and it does not turn on a dime. The technology changes faster than education can come up with, you know, especially from a bureaucratic standpoint. Technology is changing quicker than they can come out with programs to utilize it. It's got to be streamlined a lot more. Say, okay, wait a minute, this changed. Now we've got to be able to do this and move that quickly.
What have been the attitudes of the different stakeholders in this, like families, administrators, teachers, students?
I think that from an attitude standpoint, that's what's helped us move the funding for smart boards and et cetera. As they see it in some classrooms but not in others, a lot of people are like, well, why can't we have it everywhere? And teachers, 4 years ago when we put one in, we might walk in and it might be being used if we put a smart board in. Some of them, after 2 months, we found them unhooked and not being used. Now I don't think there's a teacher out there that wouldn't say, yeah, I want one. Unlike the private sector where they say, here it is, use it. All right, in education, it's put out and they say, here it is, can you please use this? And, you know, I mean, there's just so much going on. And when you look at the end result of what our product is taking a child in kindergarten and 12 years later having them graduate high school, being prepared to go on with their life. That's our end product, the education of a child. It's not the use of a smart board. It's the education of a child being outfitted with the tools that they can use to be profitable for themselves and to move on.
Thank you, Roger. We've just been talking to Roger Grinnip, Director of Information Technology in Champaign, Illinois. Our topic is technology in the schools, the nitty-gritty. Up next, we talk to the principal of Booker T. Washington School in Champaign, Illinois, a school that has recently undergone some major changes in regard to technology. This is Examining Education. Our next guest is Asia Fuller Hamilton, principal of the Booker T. Washington School in Champaign, Illinois. Booker T. Washington School has gone through some very dramatic and interesting changes that we're going to hear about. Welcome to our program. Before you discuss the changes your school has gone through, can you give us a little about your own background?
Sure. As you mentioned, my name is Asia Fuller Hamilton. I'm the principal of Washington Elementary School. This is my third year as the principal of this school. I began my teaching tenure at Jefferson Middle School in Champaign and have been with Champaign for a total of 12 years.
Well, can you tell us a little about the changes, particularly in relationship to technology, that Booker T. Washington's recently gone through?
Sure. We are privileged to have just been built a new school, and with that came the addition of many new technological features. Each classroom, including the library, the music and art rooms, are equipped with interactive smart boards, and we no longer have projectors, but we have Elmos, which make it easier for teachers to show what they are teaching. The interactive boards allow students to take part in their education. And in addition, there are desktop computers in every room, and then as well as laptops in every classroom piazza. We are a STEM school, and STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. We have taken that concept and fused it with our existing curriculum, and we now have a more interactive, integrated approach to STEM learning.
Now, when you said that there were computers in each classroom, how many per student?
Desktop computers, we have a bank of five in each classroom. In every piazza, we have laptop computers, a total of six in every piazza, and that's a shared learning space. So each grade level has six. We are the recipients of a one-to-one laptop grant, and that means every student in grades 3, 4, and 5 will receive a laptop, their very own laptop.
But they haven't yet.
No. Well, the laptops are in. They're being imaged.
So what kinds of changes do you see as occurring?
Well, before the new school was built, few teachers had the access to the interactive smart boards, and there has been many training opportunities for our teachers to become accustomed to using them in conjunction with some of the educational software that we use, such as the Everyday Online Math, and teachers are able to utilize that in their classrooms more, and it's consistent across each grade level.
So any other changes?
Oh, sure. But we have a new program, and so with that focus on STEM, we had to do some curriculum writing and just really come up what we really felt STEM was at this early age. And our vision is that we want to acclimate students to STEM learning at a very early age so that they can increase their love of STEM as they go through school.
You talked about an online math program. Is that new?
We use everyday math in our schools as a curriculum, and we have the recent edition that is updated with Common Core, which gives us access to all of the curriculum online. And with that, the online program allows us to pull up each individual lesson, each worksheet, each teaching point on the smart board, which helps tremendously in conveying a visual for teaching point.
Is this the first year that your program has had this new technology?
This is the first year that we've had it consistently. Every teacher has it, yes.
What successes can you point to so far?
As I mentioned, we use the Everyday Math online program. We are now a spotlight school for other schools in the district and surrounding communities to come in and see how we utilize that in our classrooms. We're really excited. As I stated before, we won we're the recipient of a one-to-one laptop grant, and so our students have access, which is really exciting for us. We also just recently became aware that we were awarded the Federal Magnet Grant, and the Federal Magnet Grant, as we wrote in even more technology than what we have now, such as students having iPads to use. These are things that they use in their daily life, and we just want to bring it into the school and show them how they can use it in an educational way. So we're off to a great start here at Washington.
That does sound exciting. What are some of the barriers that you're facing?
We were on a pretty tight timeline in terms of getting the school open and up and running on time. But fortunately, I have a staff and a support system that put in the sweat equity to ensure that we didn't miss a beat when it came to student instruction. Everything was finished on time for the start of school, and the professional development opportunities to learn more about the technology and infusing it into the classroom has been a continuous ongoing process.
When did that start?
The professional development actually started last year. We work with the Learning Technology Group on the U of I campus, and Dr. Pam Fetty and her staff, they came over and trained us on how to use the smart boards, gave us an introductory course on that, as well as how to use it in conjunction with our curriculum. They did a short presentation on the ELMO projectors that we have, which is a newer form of projecting. They work with us on some of the scientific technologies that they have, such as the microscopes and the just scopes in general that students can use in conjunction with what they're learning. So it started last year. It's been continuous. At least once a month we have a technology planning day where we just sit down and we talk about what's going on in terms of technology.
Well, now you keep mentioning this ELMO. What can you tell what that is?
Sure. Traditionally, teachers had a large projector which was on a cart, and you plugged it in, and it just it only transferred transparencies. You couldn't do anything else. With the Elmo projector, what it's allowed us to do is to put books under it, and so we can actually read books, and children can read with us. So you put live material under it, and you can also hook it up so that it interacts with a microscope, and then students, everybody in the classroom can then see what you see on your microscope. So it's a much more advanced piece of technology in terms of projectors.
We were talking about any kind of barriers, and you were saying, of course, you need to deal with staff development. Financial, it sounds like you have a whole lot of grants.
Yes, we do. We're very fortunate. We've not encountered a financial struggle and as of yet. And I think that came with really good planning and anticipation of what we were doing and applying for the grant.
Uh-huh. Well, what have you found has been the reaction of the various stakeholders, people involved, the teachers, students, family, et cetera?
Our stakeholders are invested in what we're doing to enhance the education of our students, of course. We recently held our family reading night, and parents had an opportunity to see what online educational programs our students are using in the classroom that could also be used at home to strengthen reading skills. We will also be holding a similar one in the area of math in the upcoming weeks, and we're looking at holding a technology night in the building so parents can come in and learn more about what we offer at Washington. In terms of the teachers, they're extremely excited. Again, the playing field was leveled in that every teacher had access to the technology and not just a few who wrote single grants. And so everybody's learning in that capacity. In terms of administrators, it makes it easier for us when we, in terms of observations, we go around and we see the playing field is level, and so it makes it easier for us to see what kids are learning because it's up on the board. It's up. It's always there. Kids are up at the board. It's really helpful for us.
Well, but back to when you mentioned a level playing field and families being encouraged to do things at home, what about families that don't have the computers or technology at home?
Mm-hmm. Well, we make it really easy for our parents. If they want to come in, they're free to come in and utilize the materials that we have on specific nights that we have our technology nights. And we also give them the access points to the libraries that we have nearby, and then, of course, the Champaign Public Library. We want to show them that no matter where you use the computer, there are educational games that you can use with your child to help their learning.
What about students?
Oh, the students are excited. The students are excited. Their faces light up when they see themselves getting up to move an object on the smart board to the correct space of where it's going to go. They're all, when you walk into a classroom, just for general observation, students have their hands raised, they're participating, they're active. It's fun learning. It's what they're, they're technologically savvy, so they're accustomed to things like this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you talked a little bit about the support from the university. It sounds like they're involved. What other support have you had?
Our district is really supportive in ensuring that we have everything that we need and that we're up and running. And by that, I mean district administration. They've been hands-on the entire way. They've come in and made sure that if we're wireless, then we're wireless. That if something's not working, such as a smart board, they ensure that it's working virtually the next day or even sooner. They want to hear about what's happening. They want us to share about what's happening in our school. They've come in and seen it and see it in action, and I think they're really proud.
Well, tell me, you mentioned that you're using Everyday Math, which is a textbook series, and you've gone online with that. What about other textbooks? Do you see any change that's going to happen? Are you going to abandon hard copies?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't see it as that. I see technology is an enhancement tool versus a replacement tool. You know, I know there was discussion early on as we wrote the magnet grant about getting the e-readers and whether or not we wanted to replace books. And after going on and on, you know, we decided, yeah, we'll get a few, but they won't replace books because nothing can replace a book. There's just nothing like the smell of it, to see the pictures, and kids prefer it. We actually had a teacher who had one, and she put it out in front of the kids, and she was like, you can read the book on here, you can read it, you know, a regular book, and they chose a regular book. So there's some familiarity, and their books are good, so I don't see them going anywhere.
Well, what advice would you give to other schools who may be contemplating such changes?
My advice is to ensure that there is a lot of planning and that the professional development is available and that it happens on a continual basis with time embedded to problem solve. That's really critical in getting a program up and moving and running.
So what do you see happening in the next few years in your school?
Oh, wow. Well, the next few years, in terms of technology, I'd like to see every student and child have access to a laptop that they can use at school and at home. Every child having access to that. And I'm not just in our school, but I'd like to see that district-wide.
Let me ask you this. Well, why do you think you want them to have access? What will that do for them?
Well, the Internet is a powerful thing, and with guidance, there can be a lot of programs that students can learn. They can do to strengthen their word skills. I, for one, go home and play crossword puzzles. I do crosswords, and it just strengthens the memory. There are lots of things they can do. We're living in a technological world, and I think if we start students off at a younger age, and we guide them in what we want them to learn and how to use the program, I think they'll be more successful at the navigation of it as they become older.
We've just been talking to Asia Fuller Hamilton, principal of Booker T. Washington School in Champaign, Illinois. This is Examining Education. Our topic today was technology in schools, the nitty-gritty. For more information about this series, go to our website at examiningeducation.org. Our website also provides links to other sites that include additional details about the issues raised by each guest. We welcome your suggestions for future topics and your comments about what you heard today, so go to our website or follow us on Facebook, Examining Education. Today's program was produced with help from managing editor Jason Croft and audio support from Mike Pritchard. I'm the host and producer, Elizabeth Goldsmith-Conley. This is Examining Education.